Good afternoon, dear colleagues. We have had the board of directors in its new composition, and the board of directors elected its chairman, Viktor Zubkov, and Alexei Miller as his deputy. I suggest that we should begin. The first question is to Viktor Alexeyevich. I would like to congratulate you with this new appointment, and could you please explain, there have been rumors that possibly Mr. Novak will be appointed as the chairman, so where do these rumors come from? Could you share some comments with us about this persistent rumors that your position can be taken by Mr. Novak, the Minister of Energy? Well, first of all, thank you for your congratulations. I can only say it this way, that in Gazprom is order, everything is functioning very stably, which is being confirmed by the report made today by the chairman of the management board, Alexei Miller, as well as the course that the shareholders meeting took, the shareholders, and in the first place, the biggest shareholder, the government, is supporting the company's stable work, confirming that the company is moving in the proper direction. So at the government level, a decision was made not to institute any changes, including in the personnel matters, as well as the composition of the board of directors is concerned. As far as Alexander Novak is concerned, he's a very eminent professional. I've known him for quite some time, and as far as his work in the government is concerned, he was included into the composition of the board of directors of Gazprom, and he will work along with us. That's the only thing I can say. Dear colleagues, Alexander Valentinovich is right here with us, and with your permission, we would like to allow Viktor Alexeyevich to continue the conversation that he started with Mr. Novak, while we would continue following the agenda of the press conference. Alexei Borisovich, yes, indeed, I would like to wish you to respond well to all of the questions. Thank you. Well then, good afternoon. Yes, please, your questions now. Mr. Serov, please. Alexei Borisovich, my question is about the Nord Stream. You mentioned it in St. Petersburg, and today also said that all of the new capacities, all of the 55 billion cubic meters of gas, will be dedicated to the new contracts. Now, based on the practice that the contracts are being entered into before the construction stage, does this mean that Gazprom, within the next year or two, will conclude new contracts for 55 billion cubic meters of gas? Is there an understanding already to which countries, which markets this gas will be sold, and will there be new long-term contracts for the supply of gas to the United Kingdom? Thank you very much. Yes, indeed, in St. Petersburg, we signed a very important document, which is an agreement between four companies, Gazprom, OMV, E.ON, and Shell, about the construction of the Nord Stream pipeline with a capacity of 55 billion cubic meters of gas. The period of completion of this construction is the end of 2019, and here we're talking about the new supplies of the Russian gas to the European market. And here I would like to draw your attention to the fact that the pre-investment and pre-project work under this initiative has been going on during the past few years, and the decision to research the possibility of increasing the capacity of the Nord Stream 1 was begun following the decision of the Nord Stream AG company in November 2011. And in the course of all this time, the so-called small office of Nord Stream has been working over the respective documents of the technical and economic nature, which have been completed by now. And at the same time, last year, in 2014, in the spring of last year, the shareholder subcommittee of the Nord Stream made the decision of the pre-project and pre-investment state of readiness in order to make a decision for the start of the project. The situation in the European gas market is evolving in such a way, as you might know, that during the past few years, only Russia and Norway were able to increase the volumes of their supplies to the European market, but at the same time, Gazprom's figures are five times better than the Norwegian ones. And the main factor, which is currently producing the most serious effect over the European markets, is the decline of the European own production. I mean, the own kind of production in the northwestern Europe, with an understanding that it is the northwestern European market, is a very intensive one and the largest scale kind of a market for the supplies of our gas. So along the third and the fourth line, we're going to deliver 55 billion cubic meters of the new Russian gas. As far as our principle is concerned, whereby we first have to sell gas and then produce and do the construction, it works in its pure form only within the projects which are being done 100% by Gazprom. That applies specifically to the Power of Siberia, to the Yakutia gas production hub, the Irkutsk gas production hub, and a very classic example of it is the last year's signing of the contract for the eastern route for the supplies of gas to China. As far as the Nord Stream 1 is concerned, you are very well aware of the way work proceeded along this project. The last contract for the supplies of gas along the Nord Stream 1 was signed even after the second line was commissioned into operation. And the decision to execute this project was not the decision of Gazprom only. It was a joint decision together with our European partners, and one should understand that the decision to supply new volumes of our gas is the kind of decision which was made together with the European major players. This is their position, this is their vision. As far as the specific markets are concerned for the supplies of gas along the Nord Stream 2, they are, principally speaking, the same as in the case of the Nord Stream 1. Today, along the Nord Stream 1, up to 15% of the volumes of gas which is transported along this project to the United Kingdom. Now, let's continue the topic of the Nord Stream. I know that Maria Tiosova from the TASS news agency would like to ask another question about it. Alexei Borisovich, allow me to congratulate you on a very successful year despite the crisis, and I would like to ask you, BASF and Wintershall, your partners, who participated in the first two lines of the Nord Stream, when will it be able to enter, because it's made it an intention, before September or later? And in continuation of this question, what could be the shares that your partners in this project may get eventually? Negotiations with BASF, Wintershall, or rather the continuation of these negotiations about the companies entering into the Nord Stream 2, will continue in July. We expect that BASF Wintershall will join the group of participants in this project before September, because before the end of Q3, we expect the company to be incorporated, the company which will be implementing this project, and BASF Wintershall will become the shareholder in this company. Now, bearing in mind the fact that we are expecting yet another participant into this project, one may say that there is, there will be a bit of a range in between 9% to 15%, maybe 15.5% in terms of what our European partners in the project may have, with an understanding that Gazprom will have 51% of a stake in this project. Please, RIA Novosti. Good afternoon, Alexei Borisovich. Please allow also to congratulate you on the signing of the documents for the Nord Stream 2. This is a very important development. My question is this. How do you see, together with your European partners, the acceptance of gas from the Nord Stream 2 in the territory of Rhineland? Maybe you would have to expand Opale and Enea or build new capacities or create a certain gas hub over there. All right. Now, in as far as these capabilities that you've enumerated, yes, indeed, all of these opportunities are there in terms of their being a gas hub, as well as expanding the currently existing capacities, as well as building new ones. So this is the issue which we're currently working on, and there is an understanding that it will be dealt with and it will be resolved. Now, in as far as the Nord Stream 2 is concerned, we are certainly talking only about the marine section of it, and currently the documents which have been signed in St. Petersburg, they apply only to the marine pipeline. Well, basically speaking, I would like to underscore that within the Nord Stream 1, there was a similar kind of a situation. And to further continue this topic, there is a question from the FT. I don't know whether their correspondent is here in the room. Well, let me read it out. Does FT understand correctly that the new gas transportation project through the Baltics, like in the case of Nord Stream, requires an approval on the part of the EEC regulatory authorities? Has Gazprom started any negotiations with the regulator? And what could be this feature? Well, the construction of the marine pipeline doesn't require any decisions by the European Commission. And in the case of Nord Stream 1, we were not supposed to receive any permission like that. As far as all of the necessary permitting and clearing are concerned, these permittings and clearances will be received not by Gazprom, but a company which is going to be jointly set up with our European partners. Okay, let us move on. One of our partners in the Nord Stream 2 is OMV company from Austria. I know that there is a question about the cooperation with this company from Vitaly Sokolov from Energy Intelligence. Yes, good afternoon. Yes, indeed. The media reported about the interest of OMV for the construction of the pipeline to deliver gas from the Turkish-Greece border to Baumgarten, which is the gas from the Turkish stream. Could you please tell us, is there a negotiation process currently taking place with OMV, and is there any negotiation with OMV about their participation in the construction of the marine section of the Turkish stream pipeline? Well, as far as the marine section of the Turkish stream is concerned, Gazprom will be building the marine section independently and will be funding it on its own. But as far as Baumgarten is concerned, Baumgarten is a big European gas hub. OMV company applied a lot of efforts in order for Baumgarten to take up this due place in the European gas landscape, and without doubt the participation of OMV in the Nord Stream project testifies to the fact that thanks to this project, undoubtedly, the role and place for Baumgarten in the European gas market would only grow. However, our negotiations with OMV company have not been limited and are not being limited to Nord Stream 2 project only. I can tell you that there is an interest towards the Turkish stream as well. You know that there are different routes. And at the same time, I should say that Gazprom has always been saying, and that has been our principal position, that the best option is the one which allows for the gas through the Black Sea to ultimately come to Baumgarten. There are different views and options, but respectively, if that is the case, then OMV is objectively interested in this kind of an outcome, and they support us in this vision, and they are interested in participating in this project. One of the options, you know, through Hungary into Austria, calls for the construction of an Austrian section of the pipeline within this project. Well, we try to organize our work so as not to jump from topic to topic. That is why I will be allowing several correspondents to ask questions several times. Sophia, and let me also start with the congratulations, and maybe because I think it's possible to endlessly congratulate you. Recently, Turkey issued the permit for the surveying work as part of the Turkish Stream project. When do you expect them to allow you to start laying down the marine part, you know, in the Turkish waters? Well, in as far as the surveying work is concerned, in the Turkish section of the project, In the beginning of this week, we received the notes from the Turkish Foreign Affairs Ministry, and respectively, we are currently preparing ourselves in order to start the surveying in the Turkish economic area. So certainly, speaking about any permits for the construction within this particular part, it can only be received once the surveying is finished. And here we're talking about the section from the mark of 660th kilometer all the way to the Turkish shore. Yes, please, Maria. Alexei Borisovich, could you please tell us the extension of the Turkish stream through the European territory, can it correspond to the TANAP project? Can there be any integration? Well, you know, as far as the TANAP pipeline project is concerned, well, the purpose of this project calls for the supplies of gas from the Caspian region to the European market. And so, respectively, there are projects in extending the TANAP pipeline in Europe itself, and these are the projects which are passing through Greece. That is why, let me put it this way, undoubtedly, we see the opportunities which are currently there in order for the project work which has been done for the supplies of the TANAP pipeline gas to the European market to be used as part of what we are trying to do within the Turkish stream, and consequently the supplies of gas from the Turkish and Greek borders. Well, this kind of an opportunity is brought about by the fact that the gas through the Turkish stream along the bottom of the Black Sea, apparently, and this is putting it mildly, really, you know, apparently, will come sooner than the gas through the TANAP pipeline will reach European consumers. What does it mean? It means that the projects which are currently in the territory of the European Union in further possible extension of TANAP may be possibly integrated into our plans for the supplies of gas to the European market through the Black Sea. Well, let's continue the topic of the Turkish stream. Plats, Nadezhda Rodova, please. Yes, thank you. Good afternoon. Could you please tell us, we've heard that Gazprom is planning to terminate its gas supplies through Ukraine as soon as the Turkish stream is built. From the European Union, there hasn't been yet any support for this decision, and we haven't heard yet any response from the Euro companies either. Have you begun negotiations to move the gas delivery points, and does this require any additional changes in the current contracts with the European companies because of this? Well, we haven't yet started negotiations. If you talk about the first line, it envisages the supplies of gas only to the Turkish market. Now, we do have time to hold these negotiations, but the reason as to why we haven't started negotiating yet, because the issue of the correlation between the routes and the destination points in our project, which is the Turkish stream, this is the issue which currently remains incomplete. It's still open. You know that one of the options, generally speaking, is delivering gas to the Turkish and Greek borders. There are other ways around it. So right now, we still do have the possibility to continue studying this issue as well as receive proposals and, respectively, you know, make a timely decision to hold such negotiations. Let's continue. Argus Media. Anastasia Gurio from Argus Media, could you please tell us which ones out of the existing or planned pipelines through the European territory Gazprom is interested to use to transport gas through the Turkish stream. I mean such pipelines as Nabucco, East Stream, Trans-Adriatic pipelines, the existing interconnectors between Greece and Turkey, the planned interconnector between Greece and Bulgaria. Thank you. Yes, thank you. Well, you know, speaking about our position with respect to the Turkish stream, it boils down to us building gas transportation capacities to the borders of Turkey and Greece. Well, the rest of it will depend upon how active the position will be on the part of the countries which are interested for the transit capacities for this pipeline to pass through their territories. And so, with this regard, we are responding to what you might describe as possible invitations that may be extended to us. Specifically, Greece demonstrated such an interest and requested the Russian Federation with a query about the possibility of building the gas transportation capacities through the Greek territory. The decision was made that on the Russian side, Web Capital will be participating in this project with a share of 50%, and the Turkish Stream Pipeline, under a different name, in the Greek territory, will extend its path. But without doubt, onwards from the Greek territory, there are different options to build the pipeline further. I would like to emphasize that we will respond in the first place to invitations to us into various projects, into possible transit national projects. Now, so I wouldn't be talking about what Gazprom is interested specifically in. We don't have any preferences here. There is a route which may pass from Greece through Macedonia into Serbia and towards the Baumgarten. There is an EastLink route which has been initiated by Slovakia, Bulgaria, Romania. There is also a supply route for gas out of Greece into Italy. And so, without doubt, if one is to talk about any specific developments which you might find in these projects, these are the things that you shouldn't overlook, because if you talk about a route through Serbia and Hungary towards Austria, then I would say that this section of the project, of the possible project, has a very high level of readiness and preparedness in as far as all of the necessary permitting and clearances are concerned, because we did work over this project as part of the South Stream project, and so without doubt, if the Serbian part and the Hungarian part deems it necessary and possible for us to participate in this project, we will without doubt will look into this possibility and possibly will come up with a positive solution. But there are other routes, and effectively I can say that the route from Greece to Italy has a very high state of preparedness as well. We know that a lot of work has been done for that particular route, and all the necessary permits and clearances have been received. That is why one can talk only about the fact that work is being done with Greece, which demonstrated active attitude, demonstrated its interest, and respective agreements have been reached. In St. Petersburg, we've signed a memorandum on the joint Russian-Greek pipeline construction project in the Greek territory, and we have also reached an agreement on setting up a joint venture between the Greek partners and the Russian financial company, Web Capital. Yes, and as far as Greek is concerned, we are receiving questions through the web. The question is Gazprom confident that the continuation of the Turkish stream through Greece wouldn't contradict the limitations held within the third energy package in as far as ownership of the infrastructure facilities are concerned? Well, you know, in as far as the joint venture is concerned, that will be set up, the operator of the project, I believe that there shouldn't be any problems at all, because this is a financial entity, the Russian financial company. We are being told that the third energy package is not aimed against Russia and doesn't have any discriminatory nature. So what kind of risks there may be? We do not see any. There was another question from Vitaly Sokolov, but I believe that principally an answer has been given to it already. CDF channel, Yuri Krylov is asking, yes, where is he? Please, go ahead. Yes, right there. Yes, could you please tell us about the construction of the new gas lines from the Baltic Sea to Greifswald? How do you envisage the further transportation of gas through the German territory because the pipeline capacities are limited? And is there any need for these two new lines because the current Nord Stream line are not fully loaded? Well, I should say that there already has been an answer given partially to this question. Opal pipeline capacities are not fully loaded right now, and respectively Nord Stream 1 is being used only to 75% of its capacity at this point in time. Now, the existing capacities, or I would say that we need additional capacities in the territory of Germany, and this is the issue which will be worked on, but I would like to draw attention to the fact that this is a project where a German company is participating, E.ON. It is the company which has already signed the agreement. Additionally, what we're planning is that we will be joined also by BASF Wintershall, and without doubt, the gas transportation capacities in the territory of Germany is the issue which will be researched and resolved. And I would like to emphasize that, in as far as the Nord Stream 1 is concerned, at the current stage of project implementation, we have had a similar kind of a situation. But without doubt, all of the project parties will take into account the experience which they have had as part of the Nord Stream 1 project. And without doubt, the result would only be a better one. Sofia Dvornik from RIA Novosti would like to congratulate us for the third time. Not to congratulate, but to preempt my congratulations, I would like to ask, when are you going to sign the Western Route contract with your Chinese partners? When I will be able to congratulate you on that? And my other question, what are unregulated issues that you still have with the Chinese as far as the Western route is concerned? And if it's the price issue, well, obviously it is, what is the gap between the views of the Russian side and the Chinese side on that? Well, you know, if one is to compare the schedule of work over the contract along the Western route, so, if one is to compare the planned schedule for the contract along the Western route, the Power of Siberia, and the planned schedule for the Western route and the Power of Siberia 2, we are somewhere at the pre-contract signing stage about 6-7 months before. But a lot of work has been done to prepare the contract for the Western route. I would say that we are moving in our negotiation process much faster. You know that in the beginning of May we signed the basic terms of references, which are of a legally binding nature. There is more than a dozen of principally important articles. So certainly one should bear in mind the kind of time frame which we had within the previous contract along the eastern route. But I believe that we can, you know, finish our work over this contract much quicker. Now, in as far as the Power of Siberia contract is concerned, the work has been done in such a way that the price issue was the very last one. And the final agreements have been reached, as you recall, as part of the visit by the President of Russia, Vladimir Putin, to China. And without doubt, as a result of his personal contribution into the negotiating process, because in the end of the day, the possibility to engage in a direct negotiations for the Russian president with the Chinese leader and to make expedient decision was a very decisive factor in terms of our ability to achieve mutually beneficial agreements on pricing and sign the contract for the Power of Siberia. The work being done right now for the Western route and the Power of Siberia 2, on a contractual side is going through a very normal routine contractual manner. Now, in terms of the substantive pricing negotiations, the parties are not doing it. And similar to the case of the Western route, it's being left for the dessert. This is the final point that we will attend to. And so I believe, like in the previous case, the price issue will be the last one that we will work on, while all the rest of the contract terms, and you know this is quite a voluminous document, once all these other terms are agreed upon. Here in this room we've got present the representatives of the regional media. Alexei Yelizaryev from Irkutsk have several questions to ask about the Chinese topics. Yes, thank you. Alexei Borisovich, exactly my first question is about the power of Siberia 1 and the power of Siberia 2. Well, quite clearly, the eastern regions that I represent are related to the power of Siberia in terms of certain hopes for the development. In March, I believe, there was information that because of the Altai pipeline, that was its past name, there will be a bit of an adjustment made to the power of Siberia project. Then this information somehow was also slightly corrected. But what I would like to find out, nevertheless, in as far as timing is concerned, in as far as the amount of production is concerned, the power of Siberia, because of the power of Siberia 2, will it be subjected to any corrections? And a minute to extend this question, have you made a decision in terms of the currency that will be the currency of settlement with the Chinese partners, because the US dollars have been included? Is it going to be ruble or RMB? Yes, thank you very much. In as far as time frame for the power Siberia 1 or power Siberia 2, there is no factor over the timing for the implementation of these projects. One project of these two is running according to schedule, and the second one will stick completely to the kind of schedule that we have agreed upon with our Chinese partners. The timing of the one project is not undermining the timing for the other one. Now, as far as the currency of settlement, this is the topic that is still on our agenda. Here we're talking about the possibility to be able to pay both in RMBs and in rubles. So currently this is still subject of negotiations. Well, I guess that let us give the opportunity to Elena Hodjakova from Forbes to raise several questions, and that would be a very fitting kind of questions. Yes, good afternoon, Alexei Borisovich. 12 months have gone since the signing of this unique contract with China for $400 billion. Well, right now, bearing in mind the current oil prices and the linkage that you have in the contract, what's the real value of the contract? May I just raise all of my questions because they're very much on the same topic? Yes, yeah, no, one by one, please. All right, one by one. Well, you know, the value of the contract in terms of what we've quoted previously, $400 billion US, was the value of the contract from the point of the start of supplies and in the course of 30 years. The value of the contract as a value last year was $4 billion US. This year, it is $400 billion US. The next year is going to be $400 billion, and in several years' time, it will also be $400 billion US. For 30 years. Well, maybe. Well, it's just I don't understand how that can be related to the oil price linkage, but you know better. As I said, 30 years, this is the estimation of the contract value, $400 billion for 30 years. Well, I mean, you're smiling back. Well, you can supply gas to China for 300 years. Well, all right, at the very same time, there was an estimation of the capital spending at the level of the $55 billion. If you recall, did you take into account the construction of the Amur gas processing plant within that 55? If not, how much additional money will be dedicated to its construction? Well, and as far as the Amur gas processing plant was concerned, we always used to say that it is not part of the Power of Siberia project. It will be executed on the basis of the project finance, and it will not be funded out of the investment program. Now, after the project stage is over, at the FEED project, we will be able to finally quote the volume of the capital spending. But that will be project finance. We're not financing this project. We won't finance it out of the Gazprom's investment program. Next one. In my third question, you indeed have already mentioned that you're not talking about any prices right now for the Western route, but nevertheless, there is a bit of a slowdown in terms of the Chinese economy pace of growth, and there is also an established fact that it's additional 4,000 kilometers to lay down the pipeline to the Chinese consumers in the eastern shores. Will it be able to just stick to the $100 discount, or it will be a bigger one? Well, the Chinese economy pace of growth is still the highest in the world, the highest in the world, throughout some very continuous period of time. This is my first point. Second, the Chinese gas market is the most intensive, the most dynamic and fast-growing gas market in the world. Next one, well, of course, the price issue is the most important one. But here, one should note that we are negotiating the price of the gas supplies to the Russian-Chinese border point. And to us, the main objective is to achieve an acceptable, but most importantly, mutually beneficial terms, as was the case in the Eastern Route. So the analysis that Gazprom is doing and our negotiating position is based upon only the transportation along the Russian territory from the production point to the Russian-Chinese border upon mutually beneficial terms. Well, so we're counting from the other side. Vitaly Sokolov from Energy Intelligence also has two questions about this topic, and then we will move on. Yes, these are two questions indeed. I mean, part of the one question, against the low oil prices and a closer cooperation with China, what is a strategic priority for Gazprom? Is it increasing supplies of gas to China through pipelines or a diversification of exports into the Asia-Pacific countries using LNG? It's just that Gazprom used to say that it can suspend the construction of LNG project in Vladivostok in favor of increasing the volumes of the pipeline gas supplies to China. So I would like to find out when the final decision is going to be made on this issue. Thank you. One of our strategic priorities is acting on the strategic partnership agreements that Gazprom has with its partners. In St. Petersburg, we signed a strategic partnership agreement with the Shell. And as you understand, the main emphasis within this cooperation is being made in the east of Russia upon the liquefied natural gas. But with CNPC, our strategic agreement has been active throughout many years already, and this strategic agreement has brought us to a point where, together with CNPC, we have signed the biggest gas contract in the world, and we are working on the biggest investment project in the world. And at the same time, China is the strategic partner to Russia. And for Gazprom, one of the strategic priorities is to act on all of the commitments that we have taken before our strategic partners. And the second part of the question was about the Vladivostok LNG, right, and the supplies of gas from Vladivostok to China. The Vladivostok LNG project at this point in time is not a priority investment project for Gazprom and is not on the list of the project which will be done in the immediate future. Now, in as far as the supplies of gas to China are concerned, of the pipeline gas from the Far East, this is one of the items of our five-year agreement with CNPC on strategic partnership. This agreement, by way of the most important and fundamental joint project, is the Eastern Route, in our case this is the Western Siberia, and the Western Route, which is the Power of Siberia too. But the third, in terms of priority, is starting the possibility to supply gas from the Vladivostok area, from the far east of Russia to China, which is something that we basically are currently busy doing, basically starting this possibility. Now, our favorite topic, Ukraine. The First Channel has a question. Alexei Borisovich, one of these days the president, you know, stated that the gas discount for the Ukrainian, the amount that there is right now, $100, won't stay. Now, because of it, a new agreement has to be entered into and has to be brought into force in several days. Is there understanding what kind of a discount this should be and what kind of the gas price the Ukraine would be given? And also, another question, this new agreement, how long a period it will be concluded with Ukraine, and within this next period, will there be a principal applied to Ukraine, take or pay, I mean? Well, all right, yes, in as far as the period of a possible discount is concerned, the decision has already been made when the previous discount was considered is going to be a quarterly principle used. The president in his statement said that the Russian Federation will be targeting the Polish level of prices, but most importantly, you know, today is the 26th of June. It is the Friday evening. Monday is going to be the 29th. But, you know, Naftogaz of Ukraine, as the party to a contract, in as far as the other party of the contract, which is Gazprom, never raised any queries for the provision of a discount. And there hasn't been such a request from our Ukrainian counterparts that we have received by this point in time. Well, no request, no subject matter of a discussion. There hasn't been any request for the discount to be given. Well, as far as take-or-pay principle is concerned, we've already stated, about the period of time for which we've given this relief to our Ukrainian partners. But speaking about the 2014, well, you know, in as far as 2014 is concerned, the decision was made on December 31st, and so the take-or-pay discount was in place from January 1st until December 31st inclusive. And in strict compliance with the contract, we respectively have presented a fine over our Ukrainian partners, so the total amount of penalties, the Naftogaz of Ukraine under the take-or-pay arrangement right now amounts to 26 billion, 700 million US dollars. Well, question from the Union Agency, Roman Sobolyuk. Sobolyuk Roman, Ukrainian Union Information Agency. My question is this. What is the Gazprom's position in as far as the supplies of gas to the Donetsk and Lugansk regions are concerned, which are not being controlled by the Ukrainian authorities? Are you going to sign a direct contract with the rebels, the way you describe them? And could you please explain why are you invoicing Naftogaz of Ukraine for this gas, although previously the head of the Russian government said that the gas to the uncontrolled Ukrainian territories will be delivered as humanitarian aid? Thank you. Well, in as far as the humanitarian aid is concerned, in the first place, we all know that Gazprom has only one contract for the supplies of gas to Ukraine, which is the contract with the Naftogaz of Ukraine. Some time ago, Naftogaz of Ukraine contacted us with a very unusual request. They said, don't deliver gas to the southeast. That was the first thing. And second thing, they told us that they were not going to pay for these supplies. So in as far as the Russian aid is concerned, one should say that, A, we are acting on our contract commitments, and despite the position of the Naknefti gas of Ukraine, we are supplying gas, the gas which is not being paid for to us. So that's the matter of aid for you. Now, and as far as our position towards the supplies of gas to the southeast is concerned, we've got a single contract, and it defines the points of entry, the contracts for the supplies of gas into Ukraine. If Naknefti Gas of Ukraine believes the southeast of Ukraine to be the territory of Ukraine, I mean the Donetsk and Lugansk, then I believe there shouldn't be any collision whatsoever in terms of payment for these supplies. Now, in case Naknefti Gas of Ukraine has some sort of a different attitude or position towards these territories, and they hold these territories in a different status, they have to declare it. But they're not declaring anything to this end. As you know, under the Ukrainian legislation, the gas import contract is something that not only Naknefti Gas of Ukraine can sign, but any other trading company. Well, so we made a proposal back to the Naknefti Gas of Ukraine. We said that if you're not paying for the supplies of our gas into Donetsk and Lugansk, into the southeast, if you are saying that we should not supply gas into this territory, then maybe you should agree to very much strictly in compliance, mind you, with the Ukrainian legislation, the contract should be entered into by some sort of a trading company. As of today, Naknefti Gas of Ukraine is not giving us any answer in terms of why the supplies of gas are not being paid for into the territory of Ukraine. Naknefti Gas of Ukraine is not supplying gas to these territories itself. It does not recommend to us to continue supplies and is not giving us any answer with respect to whether any trading company may enter into a direct contract to us so as to have a contract under the Ukrainian legislation for the supplies of gas into these regions. So we are of the opinion that Naknefti Gas Ukraine should come up with a very clear and straightforward position in these matters. As of today, Gazprom has delivered 704 million cubic meters of gas into Lugansk and Donetsk. Now, the arrears of Naknefti Gas of Ukraine currently amount to $212 million for the supplies of gas into these regions. Following the established traditions, we're not only having tripartisan negotiations, but also there's a question from Reuters, I'm sure. Alexei Borisovich, Reuters. Is there a decision to stop the transit of gas through Ukraine after 2019? If it's a final one, so what will be the future of the Slovakian transit contract, which has been entered into until 2029 on the basis of the ship or pay? You also mentioned that Gazprom may participate in the construction of the pipelines in the European territories from the Turkish stream. What might be the expenses that Gazprom may incur in this project? And my third question, there are various substantive questions that you are raising. Let's do it one by one. So your first question, what was it about? What is the future of the Slovakian transit contract if you stop transiting through Ukraine after 2019? All right, I see. So all right, so let me begin with the termination of the transit of gas through the Ukrainian territory. Well, I mean, people are saying, Gazprom's plan, infamous Gazprom's plan to stop transiting gas through the Ukrainian territory. I mean, let's introduce some clarity into this issue. There is an existing contract, a valid contract, for the transit of gas through the Ukrainian territory till the end of 2019. There is a very active, very, beleaguers' position on the part of the Ukraine to introduce into the contract the kind of terms which are unacceptable to us, with an understanding that the contract which was signed in 2009 has a very well-balanced nature. At the same time, these terms apply not only to the substantive conditions within the contract, but what is important, they also refer to the possible raising of a tariff through the transit for the transit of gas through Ukraine. Today, the transit rate is $2.7 per 1,000 cubic meters for 1,000 kilometers. So the Ukrainian side is saying that they would like to raise this transit rate up to $5. So, respectively, the contract will stay in effect for the next 4.5 years until the end of 2019, until the January 1st, 2020. And we are saying that we, in as far as the unacceptable terms and conditions for Gazprom are concerned, the kind of conditions which are not beneficial to us, which we believe as not fair, we will never sign such a transit contract. The position of the Ukrainian side, we are familiar with it, even in the current period. They are trying to initiate introduction of changes and amendments into the terms of the contract. We will never agree to the terms that they are trying to institute. Respectively, if one is to assume that all of a sudden the contract is not signed, then respectively, everyone should know and understand what the risks are. But we were never saying that we will not negotiate with Ukraine about the transit contract. When the contract is to expire, on a very timely manner with our Ukrainian colleagues, we will hold negotiations about the transit contract. And I can tell you that we do have a very direct task by the President of Russia to this effect, by the President of Russia, Vladimir Putin, which is exactly what we're going to do. And these negotiations will be convened. But in as far as the risks are concerned, in as far as the terms that are being raised are concerned, this is something that everybody is very much familiar with. The position of our Ukrainian counterparts, in as far as the conditions of the contract, of the transit are concerned, they are not acceptable. So what else? Yes, the costs that Gazprom can take on when building an infrastructure from the Turkish stream, from Greece, for example, like what you said, through the Hungary, you may participate in the construction of the pipeline. Well, you know, let's wait until we receive invitation as Gazprom into different projects. Only once that happens, we may start talking about what kind of conditions in which countries we may participate. So far, I mean, there has been only one proposition made by Greece. In Greece, as you know, Russia is represented by a Russian financial company. I can't hear you. Please speak up. Yes. Go ahead. You said that you are ready to negotiate the transit issue with Ukraine. So in case these negotiations succeed and you won't have to accept the kind of terms that you don't find acceptable, you may extend this transit contract. Do I understand correctly? Unacceptable terms, nobody would go for any extension of the contract if terms are unacceptable. Before the expiration of the contract, before it is finished, terminates, we will hold respective negotiations with our European counterparts. Let's move over to the next topic. I believe that we've got quite a lot of statements made, so the picture is clear. Mikhail Serov has a question about Shell, Sakhalin 2, and other related stories. Alexei Borisovich, you signed, apart from the strategic partnership, you also signed a draft memorandum for the Sakhalin 2 to expand the LNG plant there. And it was mentioned that Gazprom is ready to consider the possibility of supplying gas for the expansion of the Sakhalin 3 plant. Now, so far, primarily, It was about Sakhalin 1 gas, something that was difficult to agree upon, but the Sakhalin 3 gas will be either intended for the Vladivostok LNG or for the supplies to China through the Sakhalin Khabarovsk Vladivostok as another option. Now, if this gas is going to be used to expand the Sakhalin 2 LNG plant, does it mean that maybe there won't be any Vladivostok LNG and there won't be a third pipe to China, or maybe that gas will be good enough for several projects? Yes, yes, this gas is going to be good enough for several projects, and I can tell you that, you know, in the beginning of the 1920s, our resource base in Sakhalin 3 will contain more than 20 billion cubic meters with the possibility of its further expansion. So without doubt, there's enough gas for several projects. But as far as the Vladivostok LNG is concerned, I will say it again that within the current period of time, this project is not a top priority for Gazprom, and it won't be done in the immediate future. My next question is about your partnership with Shell. You also mentioned that this partnership is going to be based, and you mentioned it previously today, that there may be an asset swap taking place. And the Shell has a lot of opportunities, might have a lot of opportunities after it finally closes this deal on the acquisition of the British gas. Does this mean that Gazprom may buy out a certain number of assets of the British gas from Shell in the first place? Thank you. Well, yes, indeed. Our agreement on a strategic partnership, it is built upon developing a certain series of links in terms of the added value chain in the gas industry, and certainly that would envisage a certain asset swap. But we are not planning anything to buy from Shell. And we are not planning to buy any BG assets. Now, as to any specific timing, I believe that by the end of this year, we will prepare a final list of assets which may be included into the perimeter of this deal. And I think optimistically, well, I can even say the realistic timing for signing the Shell asset swap deal in about 12 months' time, I think there will be a good result of our joint effort if we sign it during the next St. Petersburg Economic Forum. NHK television channel Yaroslav Kurashov has a question about Japan. Alexei Borisovich, good afternoon. Could you be so kind? Yes, I'm here, over here. I wanted to ask you a question. Could you please tell us what kind of a possibility of a mutual cooperation there is between Gazprom and the Japanese companies? What do you believe has already been done successfully, and what is there to be done? Yes, thank you. Well, you know, the Sakhalin 2 project that the Japanese companies are participating, Mitsui and Mitsubishi, this project is the most successful LNG project in the world, the most effective one. Therefore, without any doubt, we do have a very positive experience in the work that we've been doing with our Japanese colleagues in the LNG business. We and Shell signed necessary papers to do the third stage of the Sakhalin 2 project, and I believe that the Japanese company, the Japanese partners, could well join this project in the future as well. Well, the LNG topic is something that we have not only in the East but also in the West. Olga Mordoshenko would like to ask about the Baltic LNG project. Yes, good afternoon. I wanted to raise a question. How the work is going on over the project? Which are the companies that you are negotiating? And who may become ultimately a partner? I mean, in Gazprom it was stated that the project may be postponed in time because of the sanctions and the problems with the equipment. Is that true, and to what extent? It is true. Well, I will tell you that we don't have any delays time-wise. The next year is when we will complete the project stage, we will define the technology, and in the similar token, we will define the final capital spending. But bearing in mind the fact that we've signed an agreement with Shell in St. Petersburg, in the very near future, we, in the first place, we will hold negotiations about the Baltic LNG with Shell. the expected deadline, the end of 2020. Alexei Golikov from Interfax, really very quickly converted himself into the St. Petersburg special correspondent. Yes, Alexei Borisovich, as far as the corporate agenda today was concerned, a new draft Articles of Association was adopted, which says that the shareholders' meetings can be held not only in Moscow for Gazprom, but also in St. Petersburg. Now, due to the fact that the events are really so fast-paced, would you say that the next general meeting will be held in St. Petersburg already, like some companies do? Will you be trying to synchronize it with the St. Petersburg Forum, or will you stay loyal to the last Friday of June? No, that's what we'll discuss the second question further. Well, you know, once the decision is made and changes have been introduced into the Articles of Association, well, there is an answer then as to why this has been done. So your question is very valid, yes, indeed. We are planning our next general shareholders meeting to hold in St. Petersburg. And I'd like to say that as a result of the board of directors of the new composition which has just ended, that was the item which was discussed, and the members of the board supported such a resolution. Now, and as far as our tradition is concerned, I mean, the annual general shareholders meeting is being held on the last Friday of July, and we will stay true to this tradition in the future as well. And as far as St. Petersburg is concerned, if one has to remember the previous speech done in the St. Petersburg Forum, I believe it was in 2008, you said that specifically the St. Petersburg may be turned into a gas trading hub for the North Stream. And recently you also said that you are planning to create a hub at the destination point of the Turkish Stream at the Turkish-Greek border. Is Gazprom ready for this kind of work? Well, you know, we are introducing changes into our strategy, the kind of strategy that we perform in the European market. Gazprom has made various decisions to employ a new pricing mechanism when shipping gas to Europe. We will work, amongst other things, over the gas auction mechanism. The first auction will take place, as you definitely guessed, in St. Petersburg in September this year. Approximately 3 billion cubic meters of gas will be tendered through this auction. These volumes will be split into 120 lots with points of shipment to Grasswald, and I believe that there will be several other points, like, for example, for an additional payment, one will be able to supply gas to the Caspor exchange. This is an additional mechanism that will be able to work through in the European gas market. It's not an alternative to the supplies of gas under the long-term contracts. All of the details, and in as far as the gas auction process is concerned, in as far as a participation in this gas auction, will be published in July on the Gazprom Export Company website. Alexei Borisovich, 3 billion, the gas at least. I mean, we are familiar with this figure, which is the requirement by the European Commission within the utilization of the Opal pipeline capacities. Does this mean that this is the very same gas release? No, it doesn't mean that. Once again, I would like to draw your attention to a new mechanism. Well, in other words, this kind of step doesn't alleviate the problem of unblocking half of the Opal gas pipeline's capacities. No, we're talking about a brand new mechanism. We are changing the strategy of our operations in the European market. This new mechanism is not an alternative to long-term contracts. We are introducing a mechanism of a gas auction. Once again, remembering the St. Petersburg news,
to me, as one of the surprising news was not a very large release in terms of the meeting with the state Azerbaijan Gas and Oil Company. Ankara at some point used to buy gas from us, then turned itself into a very ambitious exporter, and consequently the supplies of Russian gas to Azerbaijan ceased. Then it started selling gas into Russia. There was a lot of ambitions to grow these supplies, and here we read that again may turn itself to the Russian gas resources. And at the same time, the Azeri gas in its time was being described as a very serious competitor to the Russian gas in the European market. Could you please comment as to what's going on with it right now? Well, it's not that it can resort to it. You know, our Azerbaijan colleagues have contacted us and requested in the very immediate future to begin supplies of Russian gas into Azerbaijan. Before the end of this year, there is a contract in place for the acquisition of the Azerbaijan gas, by Gazprom within the current period of time. These supplies are not there. They ceased to be from the middle of last year. The Azeri economics are growing. The internal consumption and demand is growing. So here we're talking about the start of supplies on the basis of the mid or long-term contract in the amount of several billion cubic meters of gas a year. These supplies may begin before the end of this year. We received a question from the Internet. We're receiving a stream of questions from the Anton Hersonsing, a private individual, is asking how Mr. Miller may comment on the course of the discussion of extending or not extending by the Zenit Football Club a contract with Andrei Varshavin. Well, I can definitely tell you that this particular question is not related to the agenda items of the general shareholders meeting. So in the very same private matter, we will respond to this private question. Well, out of the question that I've received previously, I see that there are questions about the strategy for the energy security Eurasian and European topics, which we began discussing during our meeting in Belgrade. Mikhail Sirov is raising this question again. Well, to a certain extent, you already started answering that you are changing your strategy in Europe in as far as the new pricing formula is concerned. But nevertheless, you also said that previously you developed a strategy with Europe whereby you were building partnership along this whole of the supply chain. Now you're going to adhere not to the European but the Eurasian strategy. But what kind of it there will be, you didn't tell us. Could you please describe, you know, what is the way you see it? Will there be the same kind of a strategy used with the Asian partners? Today you mentioned CNPC, it's an old partner, but there hasn't been any asset swap with it or any discussion of such swaps, you know, on a similar scale like with European companies. So what kind of use the European strategy will be?
The Eurasian strategy of Gazprom and that the European strategy at risk, and a question about switch. European strategy is a global strategy. So here we're talking about the fact that we are joining together the gas transportation capacities of the east and the west of the country. We are creating the single system of gas supplies of the western border areas of Russia all the way to across to far east. And accordingly, we are joining up the resource bases of the eastern and western Siberia. So accordingly, the creation of single system of supplies across the entire territory of the country, the joining up the resource bases is a way to increase security and stability of gas supplies, both for the consumers in Russia and consumers abroad. Accordingly, once again, let me draw your attention to the fact that we're talking here about the fact that it's a global aspect of this strategy, understanding the fact that the joining up of resource bases into the single system of supplies gives us an additional competitive advantage on the external markets. As far as our Eurasian strategy for Gazprom, the role of LNG plays and it will continue to play in this strategy more significant role than it plays as far for European market. Alexey Borisovich, still, as far as considering the creating value-added chains in the Asian direction, could you say a couple of words? Is it possible, as with Europeans, or is it going to be a different type of work? First of all, I want to tell you that we're talking here about the matters of expanding the geography of our supplies to many countries of the world, as far as Eurasian strategy at present. Gazprom works in operation 51 countries of the world. So the matter of building various arrangements of cooperation, schemes of cooperation with various companies, with particular partners, in particular concerns the fact that within the framework of our global vision of our strategy of operation on the market, it's joining up efforts for work in third countries. So as far as Eurasian strategy, primarily, I'd like to draw attention to the fact that the strategic partners we draw one's attention to the fact that the work operation in third countries, including the countries where Gazprom until present time has not worked yet, has not operated yet. Simon Pirani has a question concerning the investment in exploration and production of gas.
As you stated in your presentation today, that the production of Gazprom in 2014 was 444 billion cubic meters with the potential for 617. It means that there is a lot of excessive capacities for more than 170 billion kilometers. Why, if this is the case, why the company continues to invest so much money into the development of the new capacities? Why not simply wait until the market changes? Yes, thank you very much. Well, you know, when we're saying that we've got more than 600 billion in terms of the potential for our production and production capacities today, you know, 617 billion cubic meters of gas, these are not excessive capacities at all. You know, Gazprom's mission is for the Russian consumers and our consumers abroad to be able to live through winters without any problems, because Russia is a northern country. Our winters are very cold. We've got a high, you know, rate of disbalance between the supplies we do during the summer and during the winter periods. And so the capacities that we have, they are necessary and they are sufficient in order for us to live through the fall-winter period. And these are the capacities which we require equally with the kind of capacities that we have in the underground gas storage. And so with this regard, I would like to draw attention that these are not excessive capacities. These are the capacities which we need to have in order to live through the winter fall maximum level. But the fact of the matter is, and here is a paradox, if we are to support the continued supplies of gas during the winter time for power industry, for household, for utilities, these peak loads are such that if we were to use them throughout the full year and would supply gas only with these capacities, the volumes of the gas supply would exceed 600 billion cubic meters of gas a year. That is why, giving you an answer, I can put it this way, that Gazprom was made as a company by a winter, Russian winter, and we're not afraid of anything. Well, the Golden Horn newspaper from the Primorsk region also has a question. Good afternoon. My question about the gasification of the regions. The Far East is the least of gasified regions, and right now we've got a pipe, the Trank pipeline, which goes from Sakhalin. There is a program of gasification for the Primorsk area, which is not being done. So there is data available which states that by 2015 there are six major municipalities which were supposed to be gasified and consume in total 1.3 billion cubic meters of gas. They haven't consumed a single cubic meter. And the businesses specifically which are involved in the advanced development territories are complaining that they're not able to get gas, they're not able to get connected. So how can you intensify this process of gasification? And who is responsible for this link between the pipe and the consumer? Well, thank you very much for this question. The gasification program is one of the priority areas that Gazprom is working on. On a very systemic basis, we are working, we have been working since the middle of 2005. The geography is continuously being expanded, and right now we've started the program, and we are running the program in the far east of Russia, in the east of Siberia. But there is a very specific distinguishment between the areas that the Russian Federation is responsible for and the Russian regions. As far as power stations, spin-off pipelines, this is our responsibility. We take our pipeline to the borders of a municipality. As far as the intra-municipal lines, the street sections, as far as connecting consumers is concerned, as far as the boiler facilities are concerned, this is the responsibility of the Russian regions, not the Gazprom as an entity. And as you know, we are working based on an annual schedule plan for synchronizing such operations, which envisages throughout all of these years a very precise distribution of responsibilities, the amounts of funding, as well as various facilities that were to be commissioned into operation on the Gazprom side, on the municipal and the regional side. And I would like to draw attention that every year the heads of the regions, as well as myself, we are affixing our signature underneath this document. This is our responsibility. Now let's take a look at what we are having as the result of the work done under this program already in the course of many, many years. So we are saying that Gazprom has built more than 25,000 gas pipelines as part of the gasification program. We are saying that gas has been connected to more than 3,511, to be more exact, townships. But the question is, what is the extent to which these pipelines are utilized? To what extent the gas consumers are already accepted? So, in as far as the gasification program is concerned, and the pipelines that have already been built there, we, on an annual basis, can deliver to our consumers the gas in the amount of 33.4 billion cubic meters of gas a year. Along these pipelines, throughout 2014, please note, I mean, the ones that have been built as part of the gasification program, less than 9 billion cubic meters of gas is being shipped. Now, the loading of these networks, as of today, is less than 27%. That is why I'd like to draw attention to the fact that even without increasing the funding by Gazprom, continuation of the gasification program the possibility, you know, through the already laid down networks by Gazprom to increase the amount of supplies to consumers is almost 25 billion cubic meters of gas. And this is the area of responsibility of the Russian regions, Russian regional authorities. But in as far as the amount of funding for this program is concerned, Gazprom is not standing still. That applies to the work we do as part of the Eastern Gas Program. I would like to note that right now, which is for 2016 and 2020, we are preparing the program of gasification for the Sakha, Yakutia, for the Amur regions, which recently were not participating in this program. Clearly, that it's the Power of Siberia pipeline project that made it possible for them to become part of the overall program. And most importantly, despite these kind of indications from the Russian regions, the overall level of funding for the gasification program, we, on an annual basis, are maintaining at the very same level, a little bit over 28 billion, you know, it's going to be 28.8 billion rubles. So we have always set our priority for the rural areas, and I've mentioned it in my presentation to the shareholders, compared to January 1st, 2006. The current level of gasification in the rural areas reached the level which we had on January 1st, 2006, which is now the average throughout the whole country. Now, the current situation in the rural, in terms of the pipeline network, natural gas, 54.6% connection. The average gasification throughout the whole country in 2006, in the beginning of 2006, was 53.3. Now, speaking about the overall level of gasification, you know, it looks very even in the urban areas. If you look at the network, natural gas together with the LNG, with that will be 78%. Now, as far as the rural area is 76, and the average throughout the country is 77%. Which is the total gasification, I mean, quite understandably, as far as the supplies of the networking pipeline gas is concerned. They're more reliable, more stable, and most importantly, much cheaper. And this is the program which will certainly continue, because it has been and it will remain our priority.
Reuters already asked a question. Bloomberg did not ask a question yet. Actually, it was the same question concerning a transit contract with Ukraine. But once again, just to play it safe, you mentioned that Gazprom is definitely naturally prepared to for negotiations on transit contract with Ukraine if good conditions, good enough conditions are offered. If by that time, by end of 2019, there'll be no system for selling Russian gas to the border of Greece and further to European Union, then Gazprom will have to sign a contract with Ukraine. Then the Gazprom's contract to pump or pay or to transport or pay with Slovakia until 2017, if I'm not mistaken. So are there any plans for negotiations with Slovakia on changing conditions? If there's no Ukraine transit contract and no contract with Slovakia, you'll... So and the approximate estimate of Turkish stream. If there's any dispute as for transport or pay, there'll be a matter for court examination if parties should disagree. We are within a court of arbitration with the Ukraine colleagues, and as far as 2016, the verdict in the court of Stockholm will need to be awaited. Unless capacities are built on the part of European Union, as far as any contract that would not be beneficial to us, would not be acceptable to us, we'll never sign such a contract. If capacities are not created, not built, then everybody is aware of risks. Everybody knows about the risks. It's been mentioned many times. That means the gas will end up going to other markets. So, yes, as far as Slovakia, as I mentioned, if there's any dispute, that will be resolved in a court. Then second thing, one needs to be aware is if the fulfillment of contract is prevented by matters of execution of other contracts, that means this collision is fairly complex in terms of who actually is to blame for this kind of state of affairs. Are there any other questions? Elena Sergeyevna, I understand. Elena Sergeyevna? It's your birthday, is it not, today? Esteemed colleagues, Elena Sergeyevna, it's her birthday, so let's greet her and congratulate her on her birthday. And then the time we've been in session is an hour and a half, so let's wrap up our work. We're always happy to meet you, and I think that in the very near future we'll have other occasions, good occasions and good news to bring to you. And there's also refreshments served outside.